the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
Mr. Speaker, can I have order in the chamber?
The House will be in order. The House will be in order. Okay.
A graphic reminder today on Capitol Hill of why an historic second impeachment of former President Donald Trump is now underway. The 13-minute video set the tone for Democratic impeachment managers making their case against the former president, his defense team arguing against the constitutionality of the trial. Well, tonight we'll tell you what happened, why it happened, what's next, and the politics of it all. My guests are Dr. Clarence Lussain, political science professor at Harvard University, and political strategist Drew Elands. You want to talk about this tonight? Give us a call. Lines are open. I want to know what you thought about today. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Thank you all so much for joining me, Dr. Lussain and Drew. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Let me start with the process, Dr. Lussain, because the last impeachment was a little more than a year ago. But this is not necessarily something that we learn in civics class. What was the process today? Why did this start out the way that it started out?
Okay. Again, thank you for having me.
Sure.
So this is unique. So there have been three previous impeachments: Andrew Jackson, 1868, Bill Clinton, 1998, and then Donald Trump last year. And each of those impeachments took place while the president was still the president. What's different about what we saw today, even though it did not seem necessary, but because the Republicans are looking for an escape hatch, the question came up of whether or not someone who's no longer in office, since Trump left office on the 20th, should still be put on trial. And what the Democrats had to argue, and effectively, although it was ignored by most of the Republicans, was that if you read the Constitution and you also put yourself in the framework of the framers of the Constitution, they clearly did not want a situation where a president could commit all kinds of acts and then simply leave office with no accountability. And so they made that case, and there really was not a rebuttal, at least not a coherent one, from the Trump side. And then, of course, they had to vote, and the impeachment managers won the vote. 44 Republicans voted to say that it wasn't constitutional, and then 56 voted to say, Democrats and Republicans voted to say it was.
Mm-hmm. We know that there are more than two impeachment managers, even though we saw them today. What is the job of an impeachment manager, and how is this similar and dissimilar from, say, a criminal trial that we may see in a county courtroom?
So is that a question to me?
Yes, please. Go ahead. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the role of the – so there's a very detailed – procedure for how the impeachment goes. It begins in the House of Representatives, not in the Senate. Usually there are hearings and then there's a vote. If there's a vote to impeach the president, then the party that's calling for the impeachment selects a number of representatives who will carry over the article or articles of impeachment, and they will basically be the prosecution. And there's some different prosecutors this time than from last year, probably most notable, Jamie Raskin. Actually, Jamie, a colleague of mine at American University for years and years and years, and he's a constitutional lawyer. And so he's extremely knowledgeable and skilled, and we saw that today. Their job, different from, as you point out, a regular court, is to make a case that doesn't necessarily boil down to that criminal acts were committed, although you could make that case. Incitement is certainly criminal. But again, it's high crimes and misdemeanors and unbefitting of the office. So the case they're going to make, and we'll talk, I guess, later about what's going to go forward. But their job today was simply to say, this is constitutional, this is appropriate, and this is why we think this is the case.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the second impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Drew, talk to me a little bit about the optics of today. Anything surprise you, particularly even as it relates to the vote, 56 to 44?
I won't say the vote surprised me. I think I was more surprised of how unprepared the Trump lawyers were, meaning they already, you know, I can talk about the validity of their, you know, of what they were trying to accomplish. I could talk about the validity of the case, but it just seemed, and first I thought it was me because I was mostly listening and moving around, but I couldn't follow the first gentleman. And then the second guy, it didn't seem like they were really proving their case. And I thought it was me until I started hearing commentaries, like even from, I think it was Senator Cassidy out of Louisiana, who literally changed his vote. He was one of the 56 who actually said, if I was supposed to be impartial and listening to it, they did not prove their case that or why this should be unconstitutional. So I was really surprised, you know, that they were that unprepared. But I wanted to follow up on something because I feel like it's a bit disingenuous for people to say that Trump is like a private citizen. You know, as a former president, we pay him yearly, right? We pay him to also set up an office. We pay for his security. He even signed for 6 months of security for his children. We pay for his travel. And so it's not like he just kind of walked away like when a senator or a congressman or a member in the cabinet resigns or retire, right? We no longer do anything for them. We do a whole lot for former president. So it's not like he's just, you know, oh, he's just private citizen. We don't have to worry about him. We pay a whole lot of money every year. Our taxpayer dollars are really funding his lifestyle after he leaves office. So I think it's disingenuous to talk about this, and it's disingenuous for the senator, the Republican senators, to talk about it's unconstitutional because it's after the fact. He was impeached on January 13th. Mitch McConnell is the one who said, let's wait. So now, because they said, let's wait, now they want to say, oh, it's too late because we said, let's wait. It bothers me. I've been really, really upset. And to watch the House impeachment managers, that first 13 minutes by Representative Raskin, just literally sparked a whole bunch of extra emotions that I didn't even think I still had around what happened on the 6th.
Interesting. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're looking at the process and the politics of the first day of the second impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump. If you have a comment or a question, I'd like to hear from you. Again, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Valerie, calling from D.C. Valerie, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Valerie, are you? Yeah, go right ahead.
Hi. I hadn't seen all of that since the 6th, you know, because I don't have a TV, and I have it for do that for a reason. So when I went in and I watched that whole video of all the highlights of some of these things that these people did, it just made me angry all over again. And it's like you guys said, he's not a private citizen. They still refer to him as the president of the United States. He's still President Trump. So he can't be a private citizen. That's number one. And number two, actions have consequences. This man boy sat in the office for 4 years and did anything he wanted, and it culminated in this coup of trying to overthrow a democracy. And for that, it's like they said, let's just wait. McConnell said, let's just wait now that he's out. Oh, we can't do anything. He's a private citizen. You can't have it both ways. You really have to say, okay, he needs to be impeached. If they can't impeach him because it's too late and he's going out of office, then they need to perhaps have him tried for federal crimes and he can go to prison. But it can't be that he just gets off scot-free. That video just made me angry all over again. It made me scared. It made me frightened. And it made me embarrassed because, of course, the whole world saw all of that happening. I'm sure they're still getting the videos, and I'm sure they saw what happened today. And they're looking at us, scratching their heads, wondering what happened to what used to be the standard, or you know what it is to be a free country. It's yeah. something to be looked up to. I didn't feel like they could look up to us. It's embarrassing, okay. And I'm really sad.
Valerie, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the historic second impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump. If you have a comment or a question, we invite you to join the conversation. So let me talk a little bit more about the process, because Dr. Lussain, this is just one article of impeachment. This isn't like the Russia incident, the phone call to Ukraine. That was really complex, and you could argue about who did or who did not do a good job about 13 or 14 months or so ago. But this is really kind of cut and dry, and I think that was brought out by the video and by what we saw from Congressman Jimmy Raskin as well as Congressman Joe Neguse. But now that they've kind of laid things out, what is going to happen tomorrow? The trial begins in earnest tomorrow at 12 noon. So what does that mean?
So I think what we're going to see is a very forensic examination of not only what happened on the 6th, but what led up to what happened on the 6th. So the context is really critical, because that becomes the fire gets stoked, and the 6th becomes where the gasoline gets poured onto that fire. So we should remember all of this is centered around the gigantic canard from Trump that he won the election, that there was a systematic stealing of the election from a cabal of dead Marxists, Democrats, traitorous Republicans, who knows who. And that has been stoked again and again and again. So they're going to put that as the context for why people came to Washington in the first place. Now, I think was starting to come out, and perhaps if I was drawn up impeachment, I would have had a broader remit, but that not only did Trump incite, but it's looking very much like people in and around Trump, and very likely with Trump's knowledge, helped to organize what happened.
You believe we're going to see that tomorrow?
I think they're going to lay out, for example, that the rally initially was, well, I don't know they're going to do this for sure, but the rally initially was going to be much smaller. There was even talk of having it the day before. People who were connected with Trump campaign became involved. More money poured into the event, up to $500,000. This has all been laid out in the Washington Post and New York Times reporting. And so it becomes a much bigger kind of event that then Trump and the entire Trump family is present at. The other factor is that the traffic and discussion online was clearly moving towards people coming to storm the Capitol. I was about to say, I've been to lots of demonstrations in D.C. I've never been to a demonstration where people brought zip ties, ladders, hammers, bulletproof vests, you know, all the things that had nothing to do with peaceful protesting. People weren't coming to just demonstrate. They were coming to carry out war. And it's hard to imagine all of that information that has been coming out, and clearly more than we are going to have privy to, wasn't known by the Trump White House. So I think all of that circumstance is going to be dealt with. And then, as they've been doing, do a almost minute-by-minute tracing of the mob going to the Capitol and what Trump did and didn't do along the way.
We have a lot to go through tonight as it relates to just this first day and what is ahead. Drew, I'm going to ask you about what Dr. Lussain just said and some other things. Also, we have Will on the phone from Maryland. Will, stay with us. We're going to talk to you as well. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. How do you feel about what you saw today? Did you see it today? I want to talk to you, so give us a call. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. Make sure you download the app from Google Play or the Apple Store. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on WHUR. This conversation continues on SiriusXM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're continuing our discussion about the second impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump. Proceedings getting underway today. My guests are Dr. Clarence Lussain, political science professor at Howard University, and political strategist Drew Elands. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Okay, Drew, the first question for you is, is there more in store? Do you think that Dr. Lussain is right, that they could, moving forward, starting at 12 o'clock tomorrow, really lay out a case for conviction? Will this look like Law and Order, Perry Mason, or something like that? What do you think?
I hope it does. No, Law and Order is my favorite show. But here's the thing. I think Professor is absolutely right. I will add that the White House is who actually secured and helped secure the permit from the permit to be on the ellipse. So they are culpable of being the ones to make sure that everybody had a place to gather and congregate. There was nothing on the permit to be able to go or march or walk or anything to the Capitol. So by telling them, Trump telling them to go to the Capitol, that was definitely his way of ensuring that they stopped the steal. So I absolutely believe that. And then if you've listened, if anyone has listened to any part of the interviews of people who've been arrested or caught up with this, they've actually said, Trump told me to come. Trump wanted me here. Trump wanted us to do this. So I believe some of what we will see is the people, the insurrectionists' own words, those who've been arrested. Some of those things have already been said in the public atmosphere, right? So I think it was strategic to be very simplistic in the charging, because also it's easier for them to communicate this to everyday lay people, to the American people, to basically say the Republicans are okay with people coming into your Capitol, defecating on the floor, killing police officers, pushing and harming police officers, all of that kind of stuff, that they are okay with this. They are okay with your vote not mattering. And while, yes, we could talk about free speech, but there's one thing to say there's free speech. There's another thing to act in a violent manner because you were not happy with the outcome. So I believe they're going to be very strong in their case. I may have a way that I want them to present, but I had no idea how they were going to present tonight. And it, the House impeachment managers are prepared and are ready. I'm glad to hear Professor Lussain's insight on Representative Raskin. So if that's the case, I can't wait to see what's happening. It's going to be the Republicans' worst nightmare. They didn't want to have to be here. They don't want things to come out. The longer we wait, the more information is going to come out. The stronger the case is against Trump is going to come out. So this tomorrow and the rest of this trial is going to be there. The Republicans, the Marco Rubios, all of them, is going to be their worst nightmare. And they're going to have to stand and say, I'm still okay with what happened. And I don't think that's going to work well for them future and in their future.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Will, calling from Maryland. Will, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah. How you doing, brother? Well, about everything that's going on with the second impeachment, just imagine that we're saying the second impeachment of Donald Trump. Since Trump took office, you know, they've been trying to impeach him. I mean, like him or not, the people voted for him. And so now they're trying to impeach him again. The first time they tried to do it, millions of dollars were wasted just to find out that there was no Russia collusion, the whole thing with him having ties to Ukraine and everything else turned up nothing. So it just sets a bad precedent because he's no longer the president of the United States, regardless if some people are saying that he's the president by default, he's the rightful president. But the fact of the matter is he's not. And so we're trying to impeach a U.S. citizen at this point. And it just sets a bad precedent because if someone that you don't, that you disagree with, it just gives a free for all to go after them. And it's kind of turning into a culture war where it's like a conservatives versus liberals where people are just going after their enemies with extreme prejudice.
So let me ask you this, Will. So you do not believe that he bears any responsibility for the incident on January 6th?
Okay. Bear responsibility, we'll have to say without a shadow of a doubt, not assumption that he told the people to come inside the Capitol. That's what we'll have to say if he motivated him to do it. Like if he didn't say he did it or told him to come into the Capitol, then we're assuming that he said that was implied. And something that is implied is not a fact. You know, you can imply anything. But at the end of the day, if we draw our conclusion based upon our assumption, and what do we have? Because it's no different. What happened in Seattle when you had people rioting and looting in Seattle when they took over the Chaz Autonomous Zone in Seattle And you had the mayor of Seattle calling it a festival of love. And you even had CNN talking, or Chris Cuomo talking about where does it say the protests have to be polite. So it's a double standard. I mean, I don't condone what happened at the Capitol, but if we're going to speak against any group, any political party, protesting in an unpeaceful way, we need to call a spade a spade. We can't play favorites. We can't play corners. We have to equally speak against the incidents. But to say that Trump was the reason that they did what they did, and saying that he gave him a call to arms, we really can't say that, because we don't know. You know, he's not responsible for what his supporters did. Just like if...
Well, let me see if Drew has a response to that. Sit tight for a minute, Will. Go ahead, Drew, and then Dr. Lusain.
I'm sorry, but he actually did tell them, let's go to the Capitol. We need to go, and I'll go with you. He didn't go. Let's go to the Capitol. Let's help some of our weaker GOP members understand that this was stolen. Let's hope that Mike Pence does what he needs to do. Later, he tweets, Mike Pence is not doing what he needs to do. So he told them to go to the Capitol. This was not on their permit as the White House hosted this particular rally. They didn't have on a permit to go. But he told them. He verbally said it. It is on record to go. And then he said, and sometimes you have to fight. He said that. So I'm sorry. That is not true. It is said, it is nobody making an assumption. We know exactly what he said. And we also know he did not release or let any of the other states, surrounding states, release the National Guard until after things had already taken place.
Dr. Lusain?
Yeah, so there's a lot there. So I agree with Drew. But first let me say that there was plenty of evidence that Trump broke the law last year. The fact that the Senate didn't convict him does not mean that he did not do it. If you read the Mueller report, not only the call that he made, but the obstruction of justice, which was not even taken up, and there were 10 instances of that. So we need to be really clear about this, that the evidence was there, but this wasn't a court. This was a political decision by the majority of Republicans. But to Drew's point on what happened, it was absolutely clear that when Trump found out that there had been violence at the Capitol, his response was not, I think this should stop immediately, I'm going to send help. His response, it was around 2:24, about 10 minutes or so after they cleared out Mike Pence. His response wasn't, I'm concerned about Mike Pence, my vice president. I'm going to call him and see what happened. That did not happen at all. As Drew said, he sent out a tweet that said, quote, Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what he should have done to protect our country and our Constitution. So what we are witnessing, what we were witnessing, is the mob was carrying out exactly what Trump wanted, which was to disrupt the vote count so that he could lay claim to keep pressuring illegally Republican state attorneys around the country to try to find him votes so he could declare he was the winner of the election. So that's what's unfolded. It got out of control because the mob was ultimately not successful and Trump, the vote count went on. But that was the goal, to disrupt that process, either through Mike Pence, who refused to do it, or through his Republican allies, who did not have enough votes to do it, or through the mob.
Let me just, something that Dr. Lusain said earlier about what we could see coming up.
Yeah.
Even if you have the same opinion that Will does, that the president is not responsible for the insurrection, the riot, the attacking of the Capitol on the day, based on the words that he used on the 6th, the the strongest argument may not be what happened on the 6th. The strongest argument may be what happened after December 15th. Because that, after votes were certified, the process that we saw on January 6th, where, you know, where mm-hmm. the, you know, where the Senate, you know, votes to, you know, confirm, prior to 2021, that is something that most people just didn't know anything about. And to be quite honest, it's right. something that was just never covered by the news media. It was right. it was ceremony right. it was ceremonial. It really was official after December 15th, and it was after December 15th that the president, through comments, tweets, and the like, that he urged his outraged supporters to come to Washington on January 6th. We had been covering this since after December 15th. So even if the argument is that he was not responsible based on what he said on the 6th, it is quite possible that we will see the impeachment managers lay this out about what we saw happen between December 15th and mm-hmm. and January 6th. Something to think about, Will. Thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate your time. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. One of the things that I found really fascinating, and you alluded to it earlier, Drew, is that the former president's defense attorneys, Bruce Castor and David Schoen, it looked like they kind of phoned it in. That's the way things looked. But I think, and if you're a high priced lawyer, and your client is the former president of the United States, you never want to look like you phoned it in. But the reality is they did not have as much time because right. his first right. group of lawyers, Drew, they quit. because it wasn't about the constitutionality of this. The reporting is that the president wanted them to argue that the election was stolen, which was completely different from the argument that the Democrats made today and different from the argument that his lawyers made today. Your thoughts about that, Drew?
I was going to say, I think they're going to possibly try to figure out a way to weave in this whole thing about there's a difference of opinion, quote unquote, of what took place on Election Day. I think they're going to tread that line from the defense side because they have no defense. There is no defense, which while some people say, oh, we could have had several articles, I think the fact that it is so specific makes it really, really difficult for his defense to do that. And I want to echo what you said earlier, too. Nobody paid attention to the counting of the Electoral College votes. Nobody did. But December 15th, from that point on, he kept telling everybody and kept tweeting, January 6th. January 6th is the day. That's the day that we got to make our claim because everything else I've tried didn't work. So he is going to – I think Trump has made himself really believe at this point it was stolen. I think he honestly believed he actually won. I think he's delusional at this point. I know, you know, from reporting that he was upset with the presentation. I think the reason why the defense was so unprepared, too, is that the House impeachment managers came strong. And even the first guy, I forgot his name. What you the first?
Are you Jamie Raskin? Or are you talking about?
No, the Trump people.
And Bruce Castor.
I can't even give him notes. Yeah, he said, "Well, we were gonna go in one order, but I decided to come next, so he could calm the room or change the temperature. But really, I heard him say, basically, I don't even think you all should be doing this because you all are too emotional, meaning including the senators, the jurors, right? Like, it's very emotional. And you all are supposed to be exceptional people, but I don't know if you're really up to it. That's how I heard it. I didn't see anything. I didn't have my TV on. I just listened. And it was just remarkable that I'm sure that so many GOP senators still voted that this was unconstitutional. I don't understand this. And it is my hope and it is my prayer that they pay a heavy, heavy price. I enjoy that there's a two-party system, and there needs to be a reckoning for what they've allowed this monster to become. It's always been festering, but now it's in their face, and they got to decide who they really want to be. Mm. Now they've shown me, but other people need to see if this is who they really want to be.
Dr. Lusain.
Yeah, so these lawyers are pretty clownish. You know, these are the kind of lawyers that make Giuliani look like Perry Mason, right? Trump has basically run out of anybody of credibility that's willing to defend him. Any credible lawyer, any of these big-time lawyers, not only have to think about defending Trump, but their reputation. And are you going to want to be the firm that defended the president who led and inspired an invasion, the only one in the history of the country, of the Capitol in which people died? So you get the kind of lawyers that we saw today, completely, as Don pointed out, ill-prepared, meandering, confused, contradictory, but their ace in the hole is they know Trump will not be convicted because you will not get 17 Republicans. So as horrible and as terrible and as buffoonish as they may come across, at the end of the day, at least from Trump's perspective, he will not be convicted. But the problem is, it's also obvious that they have no idea what they're doing. And the case being laid out by the impeachment managers is pristine and it's logical. And so Trump will be carrying this burden with him and these lawyers for the rest of his days. And there are other consequences. Corporate America, social media America have all pulled back from Trump. And we could not have predicted this a month and a half ago. Even though Trump lost the election in December, you know, he still was in complete control of the party. He had his Twitter account and all of that. He was on, you know, he still was on Fox News, although he was mad at him. All of that disappeared after the 6th of January. And this trial, I think, even again without a conviction, goes into the record for people like me who are going to be writing and studying and teaching kids about this, you know, for the rest of the history of this country.
Mm. Now, what do you think, Drew, about the argument that Attorney David Schoen made today? This is a political argument. That this trial isn't about the insurrection. He said that the trial is about 2024 and the eliminating of Donald Trump as a competitor for Joe Biden, should Joe Biden decide to run for president in 2024. Because if he is, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Lusain, if he is convicted, there is still another process for making him ineligible to run again. A conviction does not automatically do that. There is another process for that, is there not?
There would have to be a separate vote to then not allow him. But there's also Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. And that section says, real quick, that nobody should hold office who's been involved in an insurrection against the U.S. government.
Right.
So that could also be another arena in which Donald Trump could be held accountable.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what do you think about that, Drew?
Sean brought that up and tried to say but he's not like a, you know, a regular person. He was a president and et cetera. Like, it makes no sense. So about being afraid of the people who are concerned about him running is not the Democrats. It is the Republicans.
What do you mean by
that? Every one of them, every Hawley, Cruz, and anybody else on that side that may want to run for president and have that ambition, they're more concerned about him. The fact that him running, right? They know that they wouldn't have a chance. They'd also know that they need his base. So that's why some people are trying to build that case. But I just think I don't really believe that trying to keep him from running is the real issue. It is about insurrection, and it is personal in a lot of ways because their lives were at stake. Their lives were on the line. People were removing pins from their chest because they didn't want to be identified as a member of Congress, right? Because they knew that the people were after them. So I don't believe that if Trump ran in 2024, I honestly don't believe he'd beat, if it's Biden, Kamala, whoever. I don't believe he will, because there will be a stark difference in the lives of people in the next 4 years that I don't think he could do that. I mean, he may get the same number of folks that he got last time.
And so you're suggesting that if he were able to run in 2024, that the votes would not so much be in support of a Trump, but against, or support of Biden, but it would be, you know, a lot of never Trumpers. And a lot of that also, and certainly it's another conversation, if we see the economy return to where it, to pre-COVID levels, and some good news about the pandemic, among other things.
I believe that corporate major donors do not want to be connected to him because he would have been so tainted. So the money is not going to be there. Now, yes, they're going to be the individual donors, right? Individual people who may want to contribute, but what he needs to get to this point, I don't believe he will be successful. I also don't believe that it would be all about, from the Republican side and maybe from the independent side, yes, they might be like, no, he cannot come back because he was trash, right? He was awful. But I don't think anybody's really worried about that. I think Trump wants that to be said, and I think it was what everything that Sean did was about speaking to one, a person, an audience of one, and that's Trump. Because as the professor said, there were some Republicans that were going to vote that this was unconstitutional anyway. You still got Republicans that's going to vote no on conviction anyway, but they are going to have to make that decision because they didn't want to be in this place. Let's not forget this. Mitch McConnell and none of these Republicans want to be in this space where all this evidence and information is going to come out, and they still vote no because it's going to impact them in longer term. So that's just my thought.
Dr. Lusain, in addition to that 13-minute video and what we may very well see this week, do you think it could very well make a difference in how some Republicans vote? And even if they don't get 17, could more than 6? What if they get 10? What if they almost convict him with a 12 or a 14 or a 15? What kind of message do you believe that would send?
So my ballpark has been somewhere between 5 to 8. in part, this is driven, you've got 20 or so Republican senators who are up for re-election next year. And so they're also thinking about challenges in the primary and getting votes, because they have to win at the state level, not like the representatives over in the House who have these gerrymandered districts where somebody like Marjorie Taylor Greene, even if she was removed, they were going to elect someone similar to her. But that's not so. These senators are much more worried about that and basically trying to negotiate how to keep this Republican and Trump support and win. So it's hard for me to see more than 7 or 8 at the most breaking ranks and going against Trump. Some who are afraid of the base, and some who agree with Trump. And so I think, you know, that's going to be a problem. But I think Trump is tainted. I think Drew is absolutely right that I think the invasion of the Capitol was a game changer. And remember, by 7 o'clock that night, Facebook and Twitter cut Trump off. That was, he was
completely
done. They were like, this is, we've had enough. And then very quickly after that, Drew pointed out, you start to see corporate leaders backing off, chambers of commerce backing off. You start to see some of these other media backing off of Trump. Fox News, right, starts to get rid of some of its pro-Trump extremists. And so I think whether Trump wants to run or not, he is damaged goods. And absolutely there's ambition from the Marco Rubios and the Harleys and the Cruises and the rest of them. And they will stand behind Trump, but it's like the mob boss who has to watch his back because the second line is coming after him.
Mm.
So I don't think Trump goes anywhere after this. And we haven't even talked about his other legal and financial issues that are going to be consuming him over the next year or two,
I think that's
over the next 5 years.
That is certainly an excellent point, because the federal prosecutors in the Southern District of New York are coming after him. There's no question
about that.
Yeah. Drew Elends, Dr. Clarence Lussain, thank you both for talking to us. I appreciate it. And I'll be sitting there watching starting at 12 noon tomorrow. It's going to be an interesting week. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday. Absolutely. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, February 9th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.